Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. What a pathetic creature the West has created in Kyiv. The Ukrainian president regularly demands the West underwrite the Ukraine war effort, but also the country's economy. On top of this, NATO World announces a 10-year plan to rebuild Ukraine's military. Again, oblivious to Russia's security demands. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. I'm sure you noticed over the last few days that one of the most favored activities of the Ukrainian president is to go fundraising in front of anyone that will listen to him. Sounds like he has a few credit cards from Western countries that he spends on a whim at times in whatever he wants to fund. This is getting into moral hazard here. There's no accountability. Where is the money going? And it ensures that this conflict will go on, which, of course, that's what Ukraine's backers want. George.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Fundraising is a very good characterization of what he's engaged in. He's like the head of some foundation that spends all of his time raising funds. And nobody really asks sufficiently as to where is this money going and toward what end. And so this war, which is going on forever, and the funders don't ask, well, how is this in our interest? In what way are you going to spend our money that will actually serve our interests? And so he is able to go particularly to the United States, ask for limitless funds, and Americans happily do so, and the continual disaster. And when we look at, in particular, the state of the European economies, we just had the collapse, effectively the collapse of the government in the United Kingdom. We've already seen collapses throughout Europe. We've had major governmental changes in France and Italy. Probably something in Germany is heading. We're on the brink of an absolute economic calamity in Europe. And we're still somehow talking about, well, how can we give more to Ukraine when it's clearly leading everybody to absolute catastrophe?
You know, Martin, you keep hearing from Western leaders, as long as it takes. But I think that's the wrong refrain. It's as much as it takes, because that's what it's beginning to sound like. I'll be honest with both of you and our viewers. I've lost count of the billions of dollars that have been promised. Every week, more and more money is being allotted or planned, you know, procured, or whatever. I've lost track. The number is getting so big. So Martin, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, it's fundraising. The fundraising is the end. I mean, I think that's what it is. The whole point is to raise funds. Martin.
Yeah, but there has to be a limit. There has to be an end to it. I mean, something you said, you don't know how much it is. I think it's about $84 billion, something like that so far. I don't think that can be repeated every few months. I mean, I think there has to be a point where Western economies actually have to start looking at their own situation, their own people and their own crises. But also, I think, it throws up the question, who's really controlling all this? I mean, I think Zelensky is nowhere near as powerful or influential or as dynamic as we probably think he is. He's got the media spotlight. That seems to be his job. You know, you do media. I don't believe that he's running the war. I don't think he's having anything to do with the war. I think that's really being controlled by NATO chiefs locked away in bunkers somewhere. But I think the question of funding throws up another question, you know, which is who's really controlling this global dynamic, you know, this idea that the West and NATO have all this power, they have all this money, and they're able to make change around the world. Who is really controlling it? We saw just recently, I wrote about it in an op-ed a couple of weeks ago, about how Russia and GCC countries, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, are now, you know, sort of forming a sort of coalition. Their relationships are developing every single day. And they, OPEC plus, that's OPEC plus countries like Saudi Arabia, met just very recently. and decided to cut oil production. Now, what was that all about? That was really about sending a message to the American people and to Biden, which is, we don't really want you around anymore. And we'd like to actually harm you as much as we can at the midterm elections because we want Trump back. And we don't really agree with what you're doing with the Ukraine war at all. Now, you know, it's really preposterous to hold sanctions against countries like Russia that supply us with the oil that you need. It's also pretty preposterous to bang a fist on the table and say, you're either with us or you're not with us. You're against us. You can't do that with countries like Saudi Arabia and Emirates, you know,
because Martin, the people that say either you're with us or you're against us assume that you're going to be with us, and then they're in a state of shock when you're not. You know, George, Martin brings up a really good point. I mean, we see obviously probably the worst relations that the Russian Federation has ever had with the West. I mean, I think that's obvious right now. We have saber rattling around Taiwan. More and more officials are going there. Oh, by the way, Ukraine is sending a delegation to Taiwan as well. Okay, we know that what side they're on here. But Martin brings up a really a good point. I mean, how much can the U.S. alienate the rest of the world? I mean, really, really stick it to other countries if they don't get on their side. You know, this is not, you know, El Salvador, great country, nice people, but, you know, geopolitically, it doesn't have a lot of weight, okay? Saudi Arabia, whatever you think of the royal family, it has an enormous amount of weight. And if you want to go one-to-one and say who can annoy the other one the most, well, the Saudis will show you something. They have shown that. Though, Martin is right, there are probably personal political reasons, but there are economic reasons too. There's a global recession coming. You need to cut supply to maintain price. I mean, that's just common sense. George.
Yes. I think it's a very important point that you just raised, because the Biden administration just came out this week with its new national security strategy. And as predicted, it divides the world between democracies, the good guys, and autocracies.
Yeah,
and there's this existential struggle between them. But the point is that in terms of the existential struggle, most countries are just simply not siding with the West. And I think the example of Saudi Arabia is very instructive because, of course, Saudi Arabia is an American ally. I mean, it's been an American ally ever since the days of FDR. And here was, MBS, who has been insulted repeatedly by Biden. You know, this is even before Biden became president. And now they're expecting him to bail out the American economy and to bail out the Biden administration. And so the Saudis pointedly released this this letter showing, hey, you were expecting us to interfere in your domestic election. We're not going to do that. We're just simply going to pursue our own interests. And that's increasingly what's happening around the world, because where more and more countries are ditching the dollar and conducting their own transactions in national currencies. And so with the loss of the dollar as the global reserve currency, that's a serious blow to U.S. prestige and power. And this, so if you want to make it, oh, it's between the democracies and the autocracies, well, you're not doing well.
Yeah. Martin, it was mentioned here a national security strategy came out of the Biden administration. I saw you lift your hand to your head as if you were going to use it as a gun. That was exactly my reaction when reading it, because I could not seriously comprehend what they were trying to say, other than this ridiculous binary. This is something of the past. It's something, you know, this rules-based order, it should have been titled rules-based hegemony, because that's all it was, Martin.
Yeah, and, you know, we should never, ever forget, when we talk about Biden and particular foreign policy, we should never forget that it was Obama who actually said, don't underestimate Joe Biden's ability to F it up. Now, I think, you know, we're actually seeing that now. We've seen he's been in office for a couple of years. Name one foreign policy initiative that has been a success. You know, every single thing he's touched has turned to dust. We'll have to invent a new word for that, you know, the opposite of the Midas touch. But George's point about America losing power around the world, losing influence, because you can't really enforce this hegemony. You know, this idea that we've always said, and I've always believed, sanctions usually, in most cases, don't work. But also, more importantly, secondary sanctions don't work. And the problem with secondary sanctions that Biden's got is that Trump couldn't make them work when he was trying to pile up this global hatred towards Iran. Biden doesn't even have an ounce of Trump's charisma, you know, however you look at it. He can't make secondary sanctions work. He would like, I mean, let me remind you that it was just a couple of months ago that the America's UN ambassador actually said while visiting a delegation in Ghana that any African countries that go beyond trading with Russia, beyond just simply grain and agricultural equipment, will be punished by America. There will be implications. We will act towards those countries for breaking our sanctions. Well, guess what? It's already happening. You know, and something that you won't see reported amongst all the guff that Western media pump out is that in the last couple of days, here in Morocco, the Moroccan king has signed an agreement with the Russian government for the Russians to supply nuclear power plants in Morocco and water desalination plants right across, not along its coastline. Now, what are the implications of that? Massive, because Morocco is not an adversary of America. And Morocco is actually what a lot of State Department and diplomatic paratroops call best buddy status. It's an old friend. It was one of the first countries to recognize America's independence. So if Morocco can actually stand up and say to America, well, look, we don't really want to get involved in the Ukraine war. We don't want to take sides. We're not with you in that respect. But you have to respect that we have to look after our own people. You know, this war has created a global calamity, to use George's terminology. And I think when the implications in the next couple of days actually sink in to other African countries, because African countries look up to Morocco, they tend to look towards Morocco as some sort of big brother of the continent. When that happens, you know, Biden's policies are basically going to collapse because he's got no support around the world. You know, the secondary sanctions idea isn't going to work. And I think in the United Nations just a couple of days ago, there was this notion that we should give Russia terrorism status. That came from Zelensky, another one of his crackpot ideas. No wonder everyone spreads rumors about his cocaine habits, because that sounded like completely nuts to me. But I don't think Biden will go along with this idea of, you know, branding Russia as a terrorist organization, simply because you won't get the support around the world. You know, if you brand one country a terrorist organization, then you have to brand everybody else who works with that country. And of course, that's completely out of the question.
And also the same thing with these price caps here. I mean, we had the Indonesia, which is hosting the G20. I mean, their officials came out and said, "Whoa, that no one here is interested in your price cap, because you can use that as a weapon against any one of us in the future." So we have this precedent being set here, and no one wants to touch it, because once you create a precedent for it, then everyone is going to be eyeing each other. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lell. This is the home edition, to remind you we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to George in Budapest. In my introduction, George, I mentioned that NATO World, this group that has got together to rebuild Ukraine, importantly, rearm it, create a new arms industry there that's compatible with NATO. I mean, I call this kind of unicorn thinking. Here we are, you know, the country's in the middle of a conflict with a major power, and we have these Western powers and their acolytes sitting down saying, you know, well, we need to build some new factories there to create arms. Well, Russia is destroying a good part of the electrical infrastructure here. I mean, does this make any sense to you? I mean, particularly when they were sitting down, they want to rearm Ukraine. What Ukraine? What is the Ukraine they're talking about? I have no idea what they're talking about. Go ahead, George.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. And it's what happens when you start believing your own PR. So every single NATO spokesman, going from Stoltenberg and to, you know, Liz Truss and everybody else, think, well, Ukraine is doing fantastically well. You know, its military is really, you know, kicking Russia's butts and everything. And it's total and utter nonsense. Ukraine's military is not doing well. And as was shown, in fact, last weekend, Russia can just simply escalate to the point of bringing Ukraine completely to its knees at any moment. It can just snap its fingers and bring Ukraine to the stage. The whole notion that Ukraine is winning and that Ukraine can somehow win the war and that somehow the issue is, well, should we settle for the pre-February 24th borders, or should we also include Crimea as our war objectives, as if any of this has any bearing at all on reality? And this is what's happened in NATO land. I mean, that they believe their own PR, which is very dangerous. You're not never supposed to believe your own publicity. And as you say, what Ukraine are we talking about? It's increasingly unlikely there's going to be anything very much left of Ukraine other than maybe just a little bit of a landmass around Kiev. And yet, you know, there they are. You know, this Stoltenberg and others. You know, having these absolutely ridiculous discussions. So, you know, as you say, I have no idea what they're talking about. I don't think anybody else does either.
Yeah, but Martin, it begs the question of what is European security going to look like? Because the reason why we are where we are is that we, at the behest of the United States and its acolyte, the UK, they created a European security system not only without Russia, but against Russia. And they want to do it again. And we have to look back to December 17th. I want to sound like a broken record, but we had, you know, what Russia set out very clearly in black and white, what it expects for its own security needs within Europe. This is being completely ignored again. And because it was ignored, we know what happened on February 24th. So what are these people thinking about? Martin?
I'm sorry to put it to you, to break it to you, but they are thinking of an EU superstate, which is what they've been dreaming of for decades, if not longer. You know, the federalists in Brussels, people like Ursula von der Leyen and people like Macron in Paris dream of the United States of Europe. And part of that dream is having a real solid, tangible foreign policy that actually goes beyond just fancy words of European Commission press releases, you know, and this is really part of the problem. You know, you go back to February. I mean, I would go back to 2014, you know, where really this all started. And it was EU dithering and EU meddling, EU having a wet dream in Ukraine and offering the Ukrainians an accession treaty, an EU accession treaty, which blew a fuse in Putin's head. He said, that's enough. You've gone too far. And that's why he invaded Crimea to make a political point in the region that EU should not be going over this line. You know, and it's one thing. The problem with the EU is that it has some really big foreign policy ideas, but they only exist on paper. When it comes to it, they can never, ever get the unanimity of support from member states because member states don't have the confidence in the EU as a policy-making machine on a grand scale. So this is why people like Macron are trying to form this EU community, which includes supposedly countries like Turkey and the UK, because it's all heading towards an EU army, which France would ultimately control. And that is fueled by this delusional, preposterous, if not comical belief, but by people like Macron, which is that if we had an EU army, if we had soldiers with EU armbands on their arms, you know, Putin wouldn't behave the way he's behaving. He wouldn't invade Ukraine. He wouldn't do anything he's doing. All we need is this visible deterrent, which we don't have at the moment. Now, there's a couple of things wrong with that. You know, first of all, so what's NATO then? Just a bunch of retired generals, you know, in Belgium watching daytime TV all day long and talking about their careers. I mean, you know, you've got to put this all into context. You know, you're having a struggle now, a huge struggle in the world between superpowers and what their military, geomilitary ambitions are. But the EU is really the problem here, in my opinion. You know, just recently, we all chuckled. You know, I mean, journalists like me who follow the EU had a good laugh because the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, a complete threatening, you know, actually told journalists that he had lost all confidence in his own ambassadors and that he has to get news on the Ukraine war from the press, from what he reads every day in the newspapers. You know, he said to 126 EU ambassadors, you're not doing enough. You should be doing a much, much better job. And then admitted that it was the Americans who called him 2 days before the Russian invasion to warn him that Putin was going to invade. Now, that tells you everything you need to know about the EU and why we're in the mess.
Well, it certainly tells you everything you need to know about Borrell. Okay. a subject for another program. But, George, again, if this is the thinking in Europe, in NATO world, Then Russia is the permanent enemy. And maybe it's a convenient permanent enemy, too, because then it gives the reason to create the super state and then the European army. I mean, it's threat inflation. This is permanent here. The problem with their thinking is that Russia is not going to stand by idly. So, looking inward, so they want to create a garrison state against us in Ukraine. So why we will deny them Ukraine to create the garrison against us? That's kind of simple thinking, but it's obvious thinking. George.
Yes, yes. I think that's exactly what the idea is just to create this vast political bloc whose entire raison d'etre, I mean, has no other raison d'etre. I mean, you're putting together countries that have absolutely nothing in common with one another. You know, you're putting in Georgia, Turkey, France, Denmark.
Moldova.
Yeah, that's how you shove them all in, and then the Serbs. And what unites them? Well, there's only one thing, you know, the hatred of Russia. And Ursula von der Leyen and Olaf Scholz, Macron to a lesser extent, say, yeah, what are we really united about? Russia. You know, we hate Russia. We have our values. Russia is inimical to our values. But of course, you're not going to be able to unite all these disparate peoples together, which is why they're talking, particularly Sergeant Schulz in Germany, about this qualified majority voting. So we basically are always going to overwhelm the votes of the people who don't think like us. And, you know, if you do go down that path of qualified majority voting, you will not be able to keep the EU together because countries are going to walk away.
Well, George,
being overwhelmed.
You and I like history a lot. That's kind of like the regime in the late 1930s did to Europe, created a qualified coalition, if you know what I mean here. Right. Okay, I don't want to go down that path right now. Martin, the timing of everything here, we've debated this a lot on this program, and George and I have done it on our podcast, The Gaggle. Who's got the time and who's got the clocks here? Well, it seems to me, after we saw the electricity grid in Ukraine degraded severely, and then the Russians stepped away, and George already talked about the economy here. I mean, time is ultimately very much on Russia's side because it's only now the middle of October. It's not really gotten cold yet. And this is going to be a very long, difficult winter led by some of the most incompetent people who have ever held office in Europe. Martin.
Yeah, time is definitely running out. There's no question about that. It's still quite mild at the moment. But I think in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a different narrative coming from media. You know, there'll be a different perspective on how we look at this whole war and what the priorities should be. I mean, there are definitely the advantages with Russia in this respect, you know, because, you know, we're already seeing the, as George pointed out, the implosion of the UK economy, chaos in France. You've got people, the gasoline pumps, people on strike, and you've got queues going on for kilometres, people waiting for hours. In Germany, we have the meltdown of the economy. And, you know, surprise, surprise, a lot of big German companies now just recently announcing that they're moving. And where are they moving to? Ho, 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 they're moving to America. You know, so if you put all this into perspective, you know, there's a real problem in the European community and in countries like Britain, you know, because we're actually losing grip of not only our economies, but our own companies, our own infrastructure. It's all slipping and sliding away at quite a speed. And now really the only issue is the weather. You know, will we have a brutal winter this year or will it be mild? That would be a deal breaker.
Martin, that's kind of a pre-modern thing. You know, we just hope it's a mild winter. Look what they've lowered themselves to. We have to worry about if it's going to be a hard winter. This is what modern Europe has come down to, you know, a Hail Mary on the weather.
That's what it more or less boils down to. And also, you know, how long can these political elites, you know, stay in power? You know, people are talking about days for Liz Truss in the UK, who was a big champion of supporting the Ukraine war. You know, within a couple of days of taking office, she announced £2.3 billion to be sent again to Ukraine. And, you know, not a lot of people, probably not enough people, but plenty of people said, well, what could you do with that money to actually heat the country, to give it to poor people so they can actually sit in front of their fires and survive the winter? So you've got the weather issue is a bit embarrassing, if that's really what it comes down to, if that's all we're really talking about. But I also think the bigger picture If you stand back, I think I read a report today about U.S. intelligence saying the war could go on for years, and that you know there are only major colossal factors that could change that, such as either Mr. Putin resigning as president at some point, or Joe Biden being replaced by someone like Trump. Something seismic, something that could just shake the whole world and get people to think of the whole issue from a different point of view, a different perspective.
Anyway, let me jump in here. We're almost out of time here. George, I don't know if you're a betting man, but are you betting for or against Liz Truss?
I think Liz Truss is for the birds, because the Tory MPs, they're worried about their jobs. They don't think that she's going to lead them to victory in the next election.
And that is the most important thing. They even got rid of Margaret Thatcher because they thought she was an election liability.
Tories
are they're terrible towards labor, but they're even worse against their own. Okay. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.